So for this retreat, we picked up one of the lists. People often say that Buddhism and the Buddha are famous for the lists. And generally a lot of these lists are qualities of the heart. And I think of them as someone did ecological field study and all the different species that exist in the human heart and studied how they relate to each other and how they what all the things that are there, and it's remarkable what resides in the human heart. There are treasures upon treasures in there. There's a whole ecosystem, ecology to be discovered. And there are some invasive species that sometimes make their way in that don't belong there. The Buddha called these things, in one sutta he called them visitors. So it's kind of nice, it's kind of friendly. But clearly these are visitors that are don't really belong in this ecosystem. And so part of the practice is to send those visitors home to wherever they belong. They don't, you know, so greed, hatred, and delusion, and they're, you know, considered to be not inherent in the heart. It doesn't have to be there. They're visitors. They're there now, maybe. But someday they don't have to be there. But what is there in that heart? So one of the great lists is these 10 paramis. And can't be that bad to have a list of 10 treasures in the heart. Pretty wonderful that there's such a thing exists. And there are other treasures in there. But it's, I think some of the most beautiful qualities of the heart, you know, are generosity and integrity. And some people are uncertain about the renunciation part. But as if you think of it as a simplicity of heart, wisdom and engagement and patience and truth. The truth is pretty cool. And some people are unsure about this determination thing. And loving kindness is pretty cool. Equanimity is even cooler. You know, the fact that these things live in there, they're in all of us, whether we utilize them or whether we tap into them, when we tap into them, but they're there. They can grow and develop. And we have amazing hearts, amazing things that can grow and develop. And Dharma practice is to allow these things to develop and grow. And in the process, do some profound work for ourselves and for the world. It's said that human beings sometimes have profound need for healing and reconciliation, to heal themselves from the conflicts they carry within, the wounds they hold, from the ways they've been alienated from each other. That people have a profound need for a sense of meaning, for a sense of purpose. Human hearts have a big need for a sense of belonging. And if Dharma practice is really going to speak to our human condition in a good way, it has to touch these areas of our lives. And it does. That is a place where we can heal and become some. If we can't heal, we can become whole. And I think it's so cool that maybe we can't heal everything, But we can become whole with whatever is still unhealed. And maybe being whole is better than being healed. But still, that movement of healing or whole making. And the idea of belonging, being connected and being included, can be so wonderful that at some point we stop being concerned about being the one who wants to belong, and we realize that the whole belonging thing is a little bit, you know, I don't want to say it's overrated exactly, that's not true, but this whole belonging thing is like, you know, what's more important than belonging, or once we feel like we belong, is we can be, stop being a belongee and start being the belonger. We can be the one who welcomes everyone in. Come here. We're the ones who kind of say, come here. Rather than feeling we're on the outside, we're the inside. Inside, outside. There's a wonderful principle of reversal, that if you feel you have a big need, psychological need, instead of trying to get it met, offer it to someone else. So if you need to feel like you need to be healed, offer healing to others. If you need to feel belonging, you belong, belong others. If you need reconciliation, offer reconciliation. And then the sense of purpose, meaning in life. Sometimes in Buddhism, some Buddhist teachers would like to kind of pull the rug from underneath the idea of meaning and purpose. But I think every life needs to have something that it's organized around, directed for, something that has value. And I think this Dharma practice has, for me, my mind, is the most profound value that exists in this planet. At least what I've encountered so far. Maybe there's others. And the more I've been engaged in it, the more I kind of value that to bring suffering to the end, or at least diminish it dramatically, is kind of like the purpose of almost everything else that's healthy. And to have a heart that's at peace, it's so beautiful, such a tremendous value, such a purpose to have a life that's directed towards that. A life that heals, a life that where we belong, whether we're belongee or belonger. And a life of practice. It's fantastic to have it. There was there's a story of a student who comes to a teacher and says, what's the Dharma gate? The gate to the Dharma, or gate of the Dharma. And the teacher says, generosity. And why I like this, that's the end of the story. and why I like this story is that it's not clear from the story if it's the gate into the Dharma or the gate out of the Dharma. And I love it, the idea that it's, generosity is both. Coming, going, in, out, generosity, this kind of goodness, giving of the heart. And it's just one of the great things that to understand that at some point the Dharma practice doesn't make any sense, really, unless we're doing it for the sake of all beings. That we can't, if you're just doing it, it makes sense to do it for oneself when there's a need for that. But at some point, that need, gets transformed or evolves or changes. And it doesn't make any sense to see it as just me. Me, myself, and mine, my need. But rather, we practice for the sake of all beings. We practice out of compassion, out of generosity, out of caring. That's so deep that it's not even compassion. It's like there's a right hand have compassion for the left hand when it cleans it? Do they have compassion for each other? It's just like that's what they do, they come together. It can be that intimate, that integral, that movement towards caring and being connected and having empathy and concern for each other. And so I hope that, and these paramis, the theme for this week, I've said that a few times now, but I think it's worth underscoring now as we come to an end on talking about this theme, is that these paramis are not ordinary generosity, not ordinary ethics or renunciation, patience, and all these things. In an ordinary way, those can be useful too. But what makes a parami, is when the dedication, when the context for it, when the meaning for it is in the service of compassion and liberation. When it comes out of that dedication, when it's related to it, when it supports that movement, and to see these paramis as both the product of or the flow, the natural flow out of our liberation and our compassion, but also the paramis are that which supports the growth of liberation and compassion. And to practice in order to become a person who cares, become a person who is interested in the welfare of self and others, is a wonderful thing. So, I hope that you have a little intuition now or sense that these 10 treasures are in you. And if you have a little sense that maybe there's some of them are strong, some of them are weak, some of them may be a little seed, dormant seed, I hope that as you go forward in your life and in your practice, that you'll have the occasion to allow for these wonderful seeds to germinate and sprout and grow, and these beautiful qualities to kind of become your qualities, become you, as you share this life with other beings and other people. So thank you, and thank you for the retreat. Thank you for the week that we've been on this journey together. Quite moved and touched by all of you this retreat, by the practice here. And some of you have never been here before. They think this is normal. You know, this is what you're normal. This is what an IRC retreat is like. Just like this. And but for me, it wasn't normal. There was something very sincere and dedicated and tranquil and engaged. It was very touching for me to be here with all of you. And somehow, it felt appropriate to mark this occasion, to do something I've never done here before in the retreat, but to do a little refuge ceremony. So.
To know that a refuge ceremony has not have been done here, and for me to be a part of it for the first time here,
I wouldn't know how it's done, so you don't have nothing to compare to.
This is a very sweet gift and offering, and thank you to Matt for your support in making this true. So, those visitors that Gil talked about, these cords are going to protect us from them. Maybe. It's a nice intention, yeah? So with that, let's take a moment to feel into our intentions as they sit with us here, now. Your resolve. Perhaps it's a resolve to non-clinging, as we mentioned earlier. A resolve for loving kindness, compassion. Understanding that your retreat is simply transforming. It's a close of one piece of it, and it's transforming and opening into something new. Something new that will be a continuation of your practice, where you can engage with this resolve. Do you have it? So one by one, we have two sets of cords here. Invite you to come up, and as you are standing, moving, walking, moving in your resolve, moving with your resolve and your intention, and allowing that to be the motivation and the intention as you pick up your cord. Okay. So let's start.
But if we sing that Buddha, 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 while they do that.
Nice idea. We'll turn your mic on.
Oh, I got in trouble. This guy is tricky.
See what I did? I have to tell you a story later how I planted that seed there. Thanks for picking that up. So as we sing together, just come up. We're not going to point anything. Just come up as you feel and collect your cord. And we'll begin.
Yeah, so we'll start all together with Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Buddha, Mande, Dharma, 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 Mande, Buddha, Sangha, Sangha, Mande, Buddha, Dharma. Buddha,
Connecting with your cord, getting to know it, saying hello, how are you? remembering your resolve. And so I wasn't quite clear about not tying it on just yet.
Hmm.
So if you did tie it and it's knotted, that is A-okay. Beautiful. If you did not, I invite you to turn to closest neighbor who also did not.
So, have one. I need one, and you need one.
Yes.
Is there a even number here, or odd? Anybody not have a partner?
I got you.
Yeah, I have Bart. So, let's see. Anybody not have a partner? Everybody has a partner. So they come up here, to Josen. Josen needs a partner.
I wasn't going to go without a partner.
Here, are you? We're doing this together.
Yes. Can we share here together? And so as you are connecting with your partner, again, step by step, we're moving ahead very quickly, but let's come back to here. Connecting with your partner, perhaps just looking at each other, taking each other in, just noticing what they look like, not worrying about any projections that you may have had early in the retreat. Only the teachers know that. Really taking in this person. And allowing this person to take in your resolve and your intention, sharing that with them. Now, one of you placing your palms up, the other person placing their palms down over each other. You can touch each other, they can be hovering, whatever's comfortable for you. And so now the person with their palms facing up, this may be the person who's in the mood to receive in this moment. The person with their palms facing down may be in a giving mood right now. So the person with their palms facing up, you will receive your cord first. Okay? So please give your cord to your partner. The person with their palms facing down has your cord now. And checking in with your partner on where they would like the cord to be. Mallet hand, please. It could be your wrist, it could be an ankle, it could be around your neck. If it's around your wrist, the cord will probably should be long enough to wrap around three times. This is representing refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's okay to have some extra on the end. We're not tying a knot just yet. Stay with me, my friends. So now the first knot you will tie, together you're going to pay homage to the Buddha. So your partner will tie that knot for you, that very first knot. Making sure it's not too tight. We like our blood circulation. The second knot is going to be an homage to the Dhamma. And the third knot will be an homage to the Sangha. And we do this in partnership to really feel into the Sangha, the community. if you'd like, if it's comfortable for you, you yourself can put in one more knot, a fourth knot, that is an homage to your intention, an homage to your resolve, perhaps with some help from your partner. I'm okay. And now preparing to switch roles, the giver becomes the receiver becomes the giver. Taking a moment to check in with your partner where they would like the cord to be. Placing it in that position before you tie it. Taking a moment to check in. Is that okay? Okay. Tying the first knot in homage to the Buddha. The second knot in homage to the Dhamma. Third knot in homage to Sangha. And again, if you would like to put a fourth knot in there in homage to your resolve and to your intention, please feel free. Thanking your partner as you see fit, bowing, high fives, hugs. Returning to your seat. So these are protection cords. What I understand them to be in terms of protection are beautiful reminders. Some say these cords protect us from ourselves. They can also ward off others. They see them like, oh, Buddhist. Like, yes, that's right. And so from time to time when you see them, it's a beautiful reminder to take a breath, check back in with your resolve. Remember this moment, a connection with your partner. We chanted, remembering that somewhere out in the world, assuming that you don't live with your partner who put this cord on, that person is out there in the world, chanting, being reminded as well of this moment, of the cord that you in turn put on them, of this beautiful moment that we witnessed here, and all the beautiful moments, all the challenging moments, a reminder of this, of this, of your practice, of your resolve. Let us sit for a moment. May our cords protect us. May our cords remind us. May our cords remind us of our refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. May our cords remind us of this breath, of this moment, of each moment.
A couple of minutes, Susan, the manager, will come and make some announcements about the closing. And it's kind of my custom here to use this little juncture to appreciate so much that we have here at IRC. The you know, it's still when I come down here to be at IRC, I'm still surprised that IRC exists. Sometimes I come down here and like I have to, almost like want to pinch myself or something. It's really? It's pretty amazing, at least in the kind of life that I live, to have a place that's really the foundation of it is so much goodwill and so much generosity and so much gratitude and goodness, you know, it's, I think all of you now have experienced it for yourself. The retreat's been run by all of you, all by volunteers. There are a wider circle of people who are there kind of in the background, sometimes in the background, sometimes the registrars are not here at the retreat that they register for, but Fred is here today, this retreat. And a number of people here have been registrars. Bart's been a registrar. And we have people who live here, volunteers, and take care of things, all kinds of things. And we have people who come here for work days, and we have people who do website stuff and scheduling things, and we have people who come to do an inventory. Can't believe how many things we have here. They have to be resupplied. It's like, I think there's some, like, your list is how long?
I don't remember. There's hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Not only is Fred a registrar, he's also an inventory taker. He has long lists to go around and see, do we need to get more things? And treasurers and bookkeepers. So it's just so much. And it's such a, to be part of this and feel all the goodness and goodwill. And it's just like, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I have this belief that Dharma practice unfolds really well in this kind of field. It's kind of like a little bit like the medium is a message, that what the Dharma is about is to develop these qualities and to live these qualities, and that comes from a liberated heart, a free heart. And so we get a taste a little bit of what it's like to be in a kind of liberated environment, or the goodness that happens in the practice. And so I hope that and I'd like to mention this during the retreat, the end of the retreat, because my hope is that this, the medium is the message, partly, part of the, how we're organized, what we do here, is nourishing for people. It feeds something, or nourishes Dharma practice in people. And as you leave here, I hope it's a nourishment that continues, that somehow the memory, or that somehow the experience of being here, and to feel that, you know, how much goodness is infused in what we do here, that it inspires you. And I know it inspires many people who don't even come here, just knowing about the place. And so I hope that as you're nourished by this, you can bring some of these good qualities into your communities. And maybe you also can bring your goodness into the communities, and goodwill, generosity, goodness. It's a wonderful thing to feel that it's, whatever is here doesn't stay here, but spreads out and goes out across the lands. And my sincere wish is that what we do here at IRC is contagious. So maybe you'll catch the bug. So thank you.
Thank you.